And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
You'd think by now, with all of our amazing technologies and communications, that people could find a way to get along better. But it sure doesn't feel that way. And so we must come up with ever more powerful technologies to protect ourselves from harm. Unfortunately, all too often, the innocent beings are caught in the crossfire. No more telling example exists than the effect that mid-frequency sonar blasts have on marine creatures. Today, we look at the struggle between the U.S. Navy and the laws set up to protect whales and dolphins along America's shores when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
As Congress prepares to hear the assessment of our progress, or lack thereof, in the struggles in Iraq, and we hear that a terrorist plot against the U.S. had been broken up in Germany this past week, and the portent of perhaps a massive air attack on Iran simmers below the radar, and China continues its massive investments in their military, it seems a good time to do all we can to shore up our defenses. Personally, I believe we should start an immediate assault on wars of any kind and forge peace on Earth. But, as that is probably at least 3 years away, we have to do the best we can with what we have. And that is central to today's show, because the courts this past week stayed an injunction that had prevented the U.S. Navy from conducting training exercises to implement its mid-frequency underwater sonar systems off the coast of Southern California, thereby clearing the way for the training to move full steam ahead. Science has proven that the massive mid-frequency sonar blasts are devastating to marine mammals, whose way of life is built around super-sensitive sensory systems for underwater navigation, location of food and friends, and the very important life-sustaining habits of mating. The truth is that mammals and mid-frequency sonar cannot exist in the same pond. We talk with Michael Jasny, Senior Policy Analyst for the NRDC, which is in the midst of the lawsuit to enforce marine protection regulations on behalf of the resident offshore creatures, which are set to be hammered, damaged, and die from these training exercises. That's coming up in segment 2 of today's show, along with the current nature news. But as always, we begin today's show with the launch of an expanded weekly Earth Summit, which begins right now. Welcome to the Weekly Earth Summit, the most important 15 minutes on Earth. Today, we launch an expanded summit and reach out to an expanding panel of experts who share what's on their mind about nature and the environment. We begin today's meeting as we hear from Carl Pope, president of the Sierra Club, over an issue that is exploding within the environmental movement. Carl?
Late in August, when no one was watching, the Bush administration handed big coal a huge payoff. Mountaintop removal mining, in which the top of a mountain is cut off, dumped into a river or stream to get at the coal underneath, has repeatedly been ruled illegal by the courts. Now the administration wants to make the practice okay, even though it's obviously against the law. But the gift industry may backfire. The administration issued it the rule on Friday, thinking no one would notice, but the New York Times broke the story on Wednesday. The public outcry was immediate, swift, and sudden. People were reading and hearing about what has been happening quietly for years. Back in May, EPA filed a $2 billion enforcement action against Massey Coal for thousands of mountaintop removal violations of the Clean Water Act. Bush's regulation was a hint that this enforcement action might be settled in a sweetheart deal. So what happened? By the following Monday, the Sierra Club, Earth Justice, the Appalachian Center for the Environment, Coal River Mountain Watch, the West Virginia Highlands Conservancy, and the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition filed as interveners, making sure the government couldn't sell out. Forewarned is forearmed. America is waking up to the war that is being waged by Bush and Big Coal on the people of Appalachia.
Thank you, Carl. The issue of mountaintop removal is approaching a crusade to care for our land. Ben Lowe, one of our upcoming voices for the Earth, speaks up for the people and the land of the Appalachians. Ben?
The Lord is the great God, the great King above all gods, and His hand are the depths of the earth, and the mountain peaks belong to Him. That's Psalm 95, 3-4. The mountain peaks belong to God, according to the psalmist, and yet every day 3 million pounds of explosives will be used to tear down mountains in West Virginia alone. The practice of mining coal through mountaintop removal is an outrage. Mountaintop removal destroys the land and devastates local communities. It's hard to believe that this injustice is actually going on today. It is also sobering to realize that most of the coal extracted from Appalachia goes to generate electricity that we consume in the rest of the nation. At the same time, it is encouraging to know that it does not have to be this way. There are better, cleaner, healthier ways to extract coal, and mining companies should be held accountable for their actions. Personally, we can all reduce our electricity consumption through simple conservation practices. Beyond that, though, we can join together to raise awareness and encourage positive change. Christians around the country are starting to hear about this, and we're organizing to support our neighbors under assault in Appalachia. It is an uphill battle for sure, but we hold on to the hope that we read of in the Bible in Isaiah chapter 54, verse 10. Though the mountains be shaken and the hills be removed, yet my unfailing love for you will not be shaken, nor my covenant of peace be removed, says the Lord who has compassion on you.
Ben works with La Rocha, a faith-based global network for the environment. You can find out more about La Rocha by going to www.larocha.org. There are deep roots to our connection with this earth, and Robert Kennedy Jr. enriches our understanding of their ancient and spiritual depth. Robert?
That in every religious tradition throughout the history of mankind, the central epiphany always occurs in the wilderness. Buddha had to go to the wilderness to experience nirvana and self-realization. Muhammad had to go to the wilderness of Mount Haran 609 to climb the summit in the middle of the night and wrestle an angel there to have the Quran squeezed from him. Moses had to go to the wilderness of Mount Sinai for 40 days to get the commandments. The Jews had to wander the wilderness for 40 years to purge themselves of the 400 years of slavery in Egypt. Christ had to go to the wilderness for 40 days to discover his divinity for the first time. His mentor was John the Baptist, a man who lived in a cave in the Jordan Valley and dressed in the skins of wild beasts and ate locusts and honey. And all of Christ's parables were taken from nature. I am the vine, you are the branches, the mustard seed, the little swallows, the scattering the seeds on the fallow ground. He called himself a fisherman, a farmer, a vineyard keeper, a shepherd. The reason he did that, and it's the same reason all the Talmudic prophets, the Old Testament prophets, the Quranic prophets, all the way back to the pagan prophets like Esau, used fables and allegories and parables drawn from nature to teach us the difference between right and wrong and teach us what the face of God looks like. And the reason they did that was because that's how they stayed in touch with the people. Christ was saying things that were revolutionary. He was revolting against fundamentalism of his time, the fundamentalists of his own time. And the people would have dismissed him as a quack because he was contradicting everything they had heard from the literate, sophisticated people of their time. But he was able to confirm, they were able to confirm the wisdom of his parables through their own observations of the fishes and the birds. And they were able to say, he's not telling us something new. He's simply illuminating something very, very old. Messages that were written into creation by the Creator at the beginning of time. And we haven't been able to discern or decipher them until the prophets came, who had immersed themselves in wilderness, learned the language, and come back to the cities to teach us about the wisdom of God. And, you know, this is where our values come from, our most fundamental values of community and morality. And, you know, when we destroy these, we're not just destroying an economic resource, and we are doing that. The economy is a wholly owned subsidiary of the environment. But we're destroying a broader resource that goes to our humanity. And when we do that, you know, we lose at some point, we'll lose our ability to be humane, and God help us all.
You can hear Robert Kennedy Jr. each week on Ring of Fire, broadcast on the Air America Networks. Thank you, Robert. There are so many issues these days, it's sometimes difficult to know which one is most important. Dr. David Suzuki, one of the finest voices of nature, helps us sort it out. Dr. Suzuki?
This is a question people are always asking me. Which is the most important environmental issue? Is it global warming, toxic pollution, disappearance of fishes in the oceans? Well, I mean, all of these things, we have no idea which is the one that's going to tip us over the edge. The global warming is, you know, the effect on the atmosphere is so immense. The repercussions are huge. I mean, the oceans are changing in large part because of global warming. You know, we have the largest sockeye salmon run in the world in the Fraser River. This year we had what was considered a large run of 15 million fish. But the great fear is that those fish won't make it to their spawning grounds because they're very temperature sensitive. And with global warming, the temperature of the Fraser River is getting higher and higher. So there, all of these things are interlinked. But I think the fundamental challenge is that the heart of the crisis is us, and it is the values that we cling to in our minds, our brains. We think that we are so smart and so important that we are in charge of everything, and that the economy is the thing that must be kept growing at all costs, and to hell with anything else. We are at the heart of the crisis, and yet we forget that we are biological creatures. And the absolute bottom line of the most important need we have is clean air, clean water, clean soil, clean energy, and biodiversity. If we don't have those things, we don't survive. So for God's sake, we've got to protect those things before anything else, and then ask, how do we have an economy and a society that can live in balance with those things? And when you look at it that way, the overriding need that we have is to realize the urgency. I like to say it's the equivalent of 1,000 Pearl Harbors going off at once. And that's the level of challenge.
I encourage everyone to track on Dr. Suzuki's work through the Suzuki Foundation. Thank you, Dr. Suzuki. How do we manage to balance our passions and convictions as to what we must do next? Dr. Matthew Sleeth, author of Serve God, Save the Planet, always seems to find a way. Matthew?
Our family had a husband and wife over for dinner last summer, who labored hard for the Lord. Their ministry touches the lives of thousands. They've done this for decades despite getting very little positive feedback. The husband disagrees with me about some aspects of environmental science. Still, we are friends. We have no argument. After sharing a meal together, he prayed, thanking God for being with us because, not despite, our differences. Could I be wrong about society's CO2 emissions causing global warming? Yes, I've been wrong about many things. When students start medical school, they are told the following. One half of what we will teach you over the next 4 years is wrong. The problem is, we don't know which half. If left with this warning alone, every physician would be lost. Fortunately, we also have another axiom under which to work. First, do no harm. For me and my friend, the most important and overriding consideration is to bring people to the peace that passes all understanding. Jesus says, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, because I'm humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your soul. For my yoke is easy to bear, and my burden I give you is light." This is why and how two brothers and sisters can sit at the table and eat in peace despite scientific or ideologic differences. Our Savior is gentle at heart, and we must learn from him. We must first do no harm. Paul the Apostle teaches this principle of harmony and loyalty to a higher cause. I quote, "I try to find common ground with everyone, doing everything I can to save some. I do everything to spread the good news and share its blessings." End quote. The common ground for our dinner guests and us is the belief in a gospel and a need to share it with those who are weary of life's heavy burdens. I believe that God gives us resources. We are called to be good stewards and to use our time, health, money, oil, education, etc. to love our neighbors as ourselves. My friend and I are on the same page when it comes to this. I may disagree with someone over whether nitrous oxide, carbon dioxide, or methane deflect light at 1,000 angstroms versus 5,000 or a million. However, the most important thing, the thing we must agree on, the world and everything in it is in need of rescue. Believing and spreading that news is what allows us to sit at one dinner table now and forever in fellowship. If we place that belief above all others, we will get more than half right, and we will do no harm.
Thank you, Dr. Sleeth. And thank you for tuning in to this week's Weekly Earth Summit. And join us next week as we invite voices from around the world to share their thoughts during the most important 15 minutes on Earth, the Weekly Earth Summit. This week, the idea of how we learn to share the earth equitably for all of we living creatures keeps demanding an answer. And that's the bottom line in the battle being waged as the courts try to weigh in on what defines national security. We go in depth into the struggles being waged in the shores off the coast of Southern California when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.